All right, it's 3/14/2024, Thursday afternoon. Herald novelist Harold Rogers. Today's actually his 27th birthday. There's some weird birthday synchronicity going on where last week was Jeff's birthday. It was the day before his birthday. I didn't plan it. Or the week before, I said, you want a pod? And his birthday was coming up. And the week before that, with the Welbeck pod, that was on damn Welbeck's birthday. But Harold and I have been having this joke about how we got to start doing onestorypod.edu, like a lecture series, educational pods, and basically just read a bunch of books, talk about a bunch of books we're reading. It's really that simple, I think. I don't need to get too crazy with the educational benefits of the pod. But Harold's been telling me about Matthias Henard. I think Matthias Henard, you know, we go into it a little bit, we go into it in the pod, but he's a French writer. He's a 52-year-old French writer. Just this past year, the annual banquet of the Gravediggers Guild, translated by Frank Wynne, who I do seem to remember translated one of Welbeck's, I think his book of poems called Unreconciled, maybe some other ones, not to associate the two writers too much beyond them both being French and maybe having some, you know, shared, maybe, but more for just a continuity of the episodes than anything else. One idea I had was an idea I spoke about a couple episodes ago with Dean, and it was about, it's kind of jokes, but it was kind of about the Austrian thinker Steiner talking about how in order to achieve a state of clairvoyance, funny ass premise for a lecture, the first two steps is to put yourself in a state of reverence and exaltation. And I guess the kind of additional idea I had to that was, I kind of think in a way that's sort of what my pods with Harold are, or they're sort of a challenge to ourselves to just really read aggressively. You know, Henard's such a big reader. He's constantly in these three novels, New Directions and Fitzcarraldo's Zone and Compass, the two earlier ones we also read over the past few weeks. There is such a, the fact of how much he's reading is so palpable. And he's constantly looking at the lives of different authors in this really kind of like literal way, talking about Burroughs, talking about Sedayit, I always forget this guy's name, the Blind Owl, the Iranian writer in Compass. He's talking about the author of The Blind Owl. He's talking about Ezra Pound. He's talking about all these composers in Compass. He's talking about and their lives and things that happen in our lives. He has a story in Zone we talk about by Malcolm Lowry about his personal life. And he's really, I think his work puts you in a state of reverence towards, you know, the power of language and how maximalist and ambitious you can get with these novels we're writing. And also, it's infectious because he is constantly reading and constantly processing his life through what he's reading. You know, and I mentioned in the pod, but there's an explicit point in Zone, you know, the Zone, which is all one night train, the whole 500-page novel, it's all one sentence and one long night train from Milan to Rome. And as he goes along this train, he's having all these memories of a woman he's about to meet when he gets to Rome, he's thinking of meeting up with, and his old memories, and we get into the pod, but also, it's a book he's reading, you know, and he's processing his life through the book he's reading, and Nard's always emphasizing the materiality of the text, you know, the actual novel comes into the text. In Compass, it's a lot about just all one long night not being able to sleep, and the times go through the night, right? 1 a.m., 2:15 a.m., 3:55 a.m., again, through a 445-page novel. And it's all started by a letter he receives from his old, lost, you know, love, Sarah. So, and that actually, it's the beginning of her essay. And that actual essay is transcribed into the text. I mean, there's so much different things going on, but that's one idea. I feel like Henard has such a healthy and appropriate orientation towards literature that's based in reverence. And I just had the thought, like, you know, doing this pod, like, but the point is to challenge yourself, to put yourself in a state of reverence towards something, whatever you feel your vocation is. And the point is to be in that state. You know, it's not about how it impacts Matthias Henard or how it impacts whatever you are putting yourself in a state of learning and reverence towards. It's about you. So it's warm as hell out. Yeah, 10 years ago today or yesterday, but the walkbook starts March 14th. Today's March 14th. So if you can imagine it being winter, it's a little inflated. The weather's a little inflated with a global warming. But if you can imagine, this is the point in the year, you know, a week out for the solstice, I could probably, you know, start sleeping outside. And it feels like that. It feels like that a little bit today in New York City, which is nice. But I'm about to take it. Yeah, I'm about to post this. Enjoy. Like we always do with this. She gon' pick the cookies up. Not that thing won't eat, then she gon' eat. I just keep the cookie. I'm in our cookie, it ain't my fault. She gon' pick the cookies up. So, you know, just baseline. I put you on to Henard. I've been talking about him for a second.
You have been.
So you
I think
just
we have
you
the
just,
record of it. I think we have the record of it. The first time you mentioned him to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So, all right, you down two and a half to a little more than two.
Nah, bro, come on.
Three.
Dude.
Yeah, you got them all.
I
you're right.
All. Okay, look,
you're
I
right.
Got,
nah.
Look.
Nah, you're right. We don't even got to say
four,
that.
Four. I got 322 in.
So what'd you think?
So, okay. I've been annoyed at myself for not doing this in other pods. Should we say anything? Any biographical?
All right.
I think you should say how you discovered Henard.
Okay,
we should
I will.
Say some things about Henard.
Yeah, okay. I'll say what I know.
I had no idea who he was before you mentioned him to me, which is kind of insane.
Yeah,
I feel
that's
like
true.
He might be. I feel like I know we're Franco. Also, congratulations on the French drop.
Yeah, yeah. We're Francophiles.
March 6th. We're Francophiles now. I think he might be. I think he might be top three.
Yeah.
Top three alive?
Yeah, I agree.
He might be top three, dude.
So I found him. There's this book. I'm not going to mention the writer because I got beef with him in my head.
Okay.
But he had like recommendations at the back of his book.
Okay.
And one of them was Zone.
Okay.
And so I was just like, I saw the description. And I was like, I'll check this out.
Yeah.
And I ended up reading it. And then, you know, I mean, I was fucking with it. It's crazy. And then, you know, that just put me on the path.
Okay.
But
how long ago was this?
This was in 2021.
You marked the end when you finished Compass.
Yeah, and I marked the end when I finished Zone, too. I didn't even realize it when I did it.
2021?
It was December 8th, the day the Zone takes place.
Wait, but when does Compass take place? I think it might play.
No, so I don't know.
No, but
you think it's December?
5th? Because he says 2 weeks ago is November 17th.
Oh, so you think it's December 5th?
And then why
so they all start in December.
Why does it start on December 11th, bro?
So, okay, wait, we got to talk about
let's
that.
Let's chill out, dude.
So, Henard, he...
1972,
born in France, small town in France.
So he's 52 now.
Yeah, then he moved out to the Middle East, or he moved to Paris, he studied Arabic, and then he lived in the Middle East for a while, you know.
Did he go to Poe Sci or whatever? Like, you talk of science, Poe?
I think so.
That's what the character is, right?
But, you know, so he speaks Arabic, French, Spanish.
Is he half?
I think he's just French.
He's just French?
Yeah, I think he's French.
But he does a lot of Middle Eastern studies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He lived in the Middle East for a long time. He speaks Arabic. He taught Arabic at University of Barcelona, where he lives now.
Okay.
You know, but he's just French. You know, I think that the Grave Diggers is like the most biographical one because that's the town he grew up in New York.
Oh, is that right?
In France, yeah.
Okay. So the main three books are Zone 2008, so that's when he's 36.
Yeah.
2008 translate 2010, then Compass 2015.
I think it was 2000. 13? Yeah, I think it's 2015. 2015? Yeah, and it won the Prix Goncourt.
The Prix Goncourt.
And then Gravediggers was 21.
21.
So they're 7 years apart.
They're
right.
They're yes.
They're all 7 years apart.
Yeah, 6-7.
And I think they're all. I think this is. They're all like related. These three books.
Well, I mean, there's stuff being mentioned throughout them.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you read Zone first in December of 2021.
And then I read
so
Compass
after Tropicália was done.
No.
It
was.
When did Tropicália sell?
It sold in 2020.
You got a French copy on you?
No, not yet. They're still in the mail. No, I'll toss you one when I get it.
But it sold in 2022. So I read this before I finished the last draft of Tropicália.
Okay.
And then that summer of 2022, I went to Europe.
Okay.
With Gabby.
Okay.
And that's where I was reading Compass. I was reading Compass in Europe, which is a good place to read it, moving all around Europe.
For sure.
And then I read this in November. It just came out. You know, yeah, I got the Fitzcarraldo before the new Directions came out.
Okay. Okay, you know. Damn. So then, and I read them in backwards order. I read Gravediggers first recently.
Yeah.
And then, so it's been winning the pre-Goncourts. I feel like it should be more well-known. Joshua Cohen gassed him
up
a lot.
Yeah, he reviewed Compass in
Merv
the New York
Emery
Times.
Merv wrote about him?
Or no? I don't know if she wrote, but she was going to do that event with him. But she didn't write about him.
Okay, bet.
But yeah, when I mention him to people don't know who it is.
Someone I just talked to bodied Gravediggers and wrote me a letter
this
morning. And he was blown away by it. He wasn't feeling the other French novel.
Yeah,
he was talking about it a lot.
Which one?
With the young boy.
Which one is that?
Damn, Secret History.
Most
Secret History.
Yeah.
he was being a little bit of a hater, but.
But no, so tell me what you thought. Okay, overall impression.
I mean, okay, bro, so Gravediggers, I'm coming in. We already talking about the diary form.
Yeah. And that's what excited you about it.
That's initially what excited me about it. It's seven parts. Had you told me to read that part of Zone?
Yeah, I did. I sent you those pages.
But was that before I started
in the book.
It? I can't remember.
No,
I think I'd already started reading Gravediggers.
Yeah, I think so. Because you tried Zone.
I was on a bender.
First,
I was only reading things that were in diary form.
Yeah.
I was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I was like, I was in. And then on page 36 or 30, 43, like halfway, or right off the bat, there's some. First of all, Welbeck's translator, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm like, I'm in off that, and yeah, right off the bat, there's some funny ass he's writing about women in a certain way too, in a French ass way.
Yeah,
in
no,
a French
it's really
way.
Funny that
in a French way.
That diary is really funny.
Yeah, and there's that part. I'm always like about to post it.
Yeah,
I'm like it's just chill out, dude. Stop trying to bomb. Yeah, but so then there's that element. He's on. I mean,
what happens in that part? Tell us.
Should I read?
Yeah, read it. This is the EDU version. We got a cite.
Yeah, we got to do that. When you're listening back, it's so annoying when both people go that part. And then, no one mentions it. All right, so listen. All right, so this is kind of what I was in the book, which is good, dude. It's good to trace.
For sure.
It's good to chart how you get into a writer. And pretty much anytime I read any part from this book, whoever I read it to usually starts reading it pretty quickly. And here, another thing about this book that I thought – I swear to God, I feel like you should be leading this more, but, and I've said this before in recent pods too, but just I've read the epigraph, you know?
Yeah.
But, in our former lives, we've all been earth, stone, dew, wind, fire, moss, tree, insect, fish, turtle, bird, and mammal.
That's a good
the Thich Nhat Hanh. That's the epigraph, and it's to the savage thinkers. So there's already some stuff about, I don't know, just, and he's an anthropology student.
Yeah.
Going to a rural part
of
France.
David Mazon.
Yeah,
from Paris. And he's going to study the agricultural life.
The agricultural life.
Because that's what he
area.
Does. He's like a farming. He does a thesis in farming or something like that.
Exactly. And then he can't finish his thesis and just wants to become a farmer.
Yeah.
But early on, he's like, he's having trouble being away from Paris. So yeah, just to finish that thought was just like the idea of, death and afterlife, whatever.
Yeah,
he's obviously getting into stuff about that, and then I've actually ranted about this one enough. But basically, he's like having trouble being away from his girl out in the middle of nowhere, and it's his diary. So it's all December 19th. He's all. We gotta take a sec.
Wait, so he goes,
go ahead.
Just to set up his project, he said, the goal of my thesis is to understand what it means to live in the country nowadays. An abstract, I thought, rather brilliant. Mm. And that's part of it, too. He's funny, because he really thinks he's real smart, and he goes in, and he thinks everyone in town's dumb, and so, you know, it's a funny tone.
Yeah, and of course, and then that goes for, 70 pages, and you gas this up well to me, and then it goes into all kinds of other stuff in the middle sections. I gotta read
read that part, for sure.
All right.
What day is it?
It's a... What?
What's entry is it? December 19th?
It's December 19th, continued on page 34. And he's all like trying to be good, you know, he's trying to be focused on his tasks, and he keeps texting with his messaging with this girl back in Paris whose name is Laura. And so the diary entry goes, 1 o'clock in the morning. Great beginning to a diary.
Yeah.
As the great Milanowski says on page 122 of A Diary in the Strict Sense of the Term, resolution, eliminate potential lechery from my intercourse with women. I suspect such resolutions are easier to make after one has achieved orgasm. I swear, this was the first and the last time. I feel overwhelmed by a terrible shame. Not Laura, apparently. On reflection, there's nothing shameful about it. People do this stuff all the time, it seems. The internet made in our image. Angels and demons. A camera. I'm the one who asked her to unbutton her blouse. I'm to blame for things getting out of hand. At first, it was just a game, a deceptively puerile game. I know precisely where I wanted it to lead. I admit that. I had the idea in the back of my mind, as Blaise Pascal would say. Italic is a magical invention for emphasizing important terms, because he's doing italics right here. I had the idea in the back of my mind deep down. I know what I wanted to do, what I wanted us to do. I passionately desired her. It was my desire that led the dance. She had only to acquiesce because she is loving and tender. And if she ended up with her hand down her pajamas, I was to blame. I have to acknowledge that out of sheer magnanimity, the shame, or not shame perhaps, but guilt. When I think about it, it's not so much the shame associated with that curious sexual practice of synchronized onanism by high-speed broadband, such a bar, dude,
yeah,
as it is my guilt at persuading her to do something that she did not want to do. I had manipulated her in order to achieve my goal. And if she allowed herself to be overcome with my desire and my lechery in order to please me, it's logical that she would feel no guilt. So I must make a resolution. Eliminate potential lechery from my intercourse with women. And then, yeah, basically, yeah, it goes, I wonder what Walter Benjamin would have thought about cyber sex the first and last time, I solemnly swear.
Yeah.
And then it's great, too, like, yeah, so basically, yeah, and then when he goes back to Paris after they get in, like, this huge blow-up, and it's just, like, brutal.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was kind of in off that, and then I kept reading, yeah, and then stay in overview mode. Zone is relevant because it's all one sentence.
Yeah,
it's all one sentence.
Broken up in 24 chapters.
Yeah. So in Zone, that's probably the main thing, was like, in Zone, he's on a train. He's on a night train for 20. You said 24 chapters.
Yeah.
Yeah, 24 chapters.
Because it's the Iliad.
Because it's
the
Iliad, it keeps coming back to the scene of the train.
Yeah.
And
and it's all set up like it's a page a kilometer on the trip. Yeah.
Damn, I don't know all that. But just, yeah, I guess like, yeah, the way he writes about women, but it's like,
yeah,
not,
no,
it's like real, but it's not, I don't know. It's good.
No, I know exactly.
Cause he's like, yeah. And he's having all these memories of different women in Zone. And then the reason why I was liking Compass so much was because Compass, he's staying up all night. And the chapters are like times during the night. I was botting this last night, dude. Just like this fool.
Up all night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, he's thinking back on his memories with one woman.
Yeah. No, that's, and you know, like all of them, especially Zone and Compass, are like packed full with like a lot of history, like a lot of different stories from history. And it's all like the way it is, it's like a bunch of echoes and reflections, like the narrator trying to understand himself through all these historical stories.
Yeah.
The way I see it, you know?
Yeah.
And like in Zone, he's thinking about, you know, that's like a military history of the area around the Mediterranean. Cause the guy he was a soldier in the Balkans.
Right.
And then he became like a spy.
Right.
And he's going to sell, you know, war crime secrets.
Exactly,
and like, he's kind of a snitch. He's going to sell it in Rome to, you know, to the Pope or the Vatican or whatever,
Vatican,
you know. But so, you know, he's remembering the whole way through, kind of, it's like a history of violence, you know. It involves like domestic violence too, and you know, military violence, and you see how it zooms into his personal life of violence, you know. So I had a, you know, I was thinking of framework of understanding these, because I think like these three, you know, it's almost like a trilogy in some ways.
Okay.
And I think Zone is the Catholic book.
Okay.
I think Compass is the Muslim book, and I think Gravediggers is a Protestant book.
Oh, interesting.
So Compass is on December 8th, right?
Okay.
It's the Feast of the Immaculate Conception.
Oh,
dude, right?
I'm about to snap right now, dude. Wait, which one's December 8th?
Zone,
yeah.
It's all December 8th. It's the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, and he's going to Rome to sell his secrets to the Pope. Right, it's a Catholic-ass book. And what he's doing, I think, throughout is trying to figure out a way to confess in some way. Like his own shit that he's going through.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Immaculate Conception, right? And, you know.
Wait, how's that relate to him? Okay.
So, he's trying to figure out, you know, the Immaculate Conception. Jesus is the only child ever conceived without original sin. And I think he's trying to trace... Like, you know, it goes back far, just the history of violence.
Right.
Like, this history of sin that you're born with and that you can't escape.
Okay.
Like, in that book, right, we hear about this general a lot from Spain, this Milan Istre, right, who was Francisco Franco's general, who was all mutilated, right? He had one eye and he had one arm.
Oh.
Right? We hear about him early on all the
time.
Is
that what Papasu is based off of in the damn...
I don't know.
Okay, keep going.
But, and then we're wondering, like, what is it, like, that's why does this guy come up so much?
Right,
and then we
right.
get, when is that? That's, you know, that's page 340. We get his mom was a concert pianist.
You talking about Zone or Compass?
Yeah, I'm Zone.
Okay.
And she's playing, you know, she's playing a concert for all these fascists.
Yeah.
Right, and it's his mom who gets him to go fight for Croatian nationalism. Right, he's living in Paris, and she's getting him. You know, she just convinced him, and you know, it's this tracing back, right, from when she was a kid. She was with the fascists. His grandpa witnessed some assassination. Right, it's this whole history of violence behind him that leads to him fucking up all the time.
Yeah,
and I think the central fuck up of the book is the incident with him and Stephanie? And the baby, right? That wasn't a baby.
Yeah.
The Immaculate Conception, right? He had a very Immaculate Conception.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's the pages I told you to read first,
dude.
A Zone, which are crazy.
I've read those a bunch of times, dude.
And, you know, so that's kind of the thing with Zone and with all of Inard is, you know, he'll be snapping off on the, you know, this fucking Spanish general did blah, 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 and all this, you know, and it's, you know, a lot of times he gets into a sick rhythm.
Yeah.
But then he'll go back to, you know, it in scene with him and Stephanie, and he pulls up on Stephanie, right? And then that's when you're like, you know, that's what gets me.
That's when it slaps.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I feel like it's also relevant. I mean, part of why I've been reading is just because it's one of the first things that I've been reading where I like if you look at my notes, it'll be like a couple of Zone notes and then it's just all my writing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because like, if you think about the structure of how to write any story, you like have like the real time scene. You have the real time scene you're moving through, right? Of the novel. And then you have, okay, this is one theory I had.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Just let me throw this out there. So you have the real-time scene you're going through. Then you have some type of, like, main memory story.
Yeah.
That, like, I often feel like can, in my writing, or in Inard's writing a lot of times, it's, like, some kind of memory you're working
out. For sure.
And oftentimes it can be a lost love. It can be some childhood thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And that's a thread. And then you have some type of, like, knowledge you're imparting on the reader. You should. So, like, in Fuckboy, like, the world of doing Postmates, like, being hospitalized, or whatever, like, all the books he's reading, and all his ideas on art.
The focus on work, too, and how a job is done. And
so this is like knowledge you're imparting. Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of mixed in the scene because as you're doing a job, it's part of the scene.
Yeah.
But then you have like and then you're kind of explaining how it works.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is a thing that like, and it's actually good for, I feel like I think I'm kind of jacking Ford, Richard Ford a little bit, spin about this. You know, you have to impart some intelligence or knowledge onto the reader. And then obviously, the memory is like, you know, the traumatic stuff he went through, you know, whatever, in my writing, whatever. And then the real-time scene is whatever I picked, like, a year and a half, right? Four seasons.
Yeah.
In Zone and Compass, the real-time is shrunk way down.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Into one train ride or one night of being unable to sleep, right? Same what Fosse does. Same what Bernard does. Bernard kind of started this, I feel like. And then what that does, then you have, and oftentimes in Zone, we learn that he's dealing, you know, he feels like he's fighting all these wars. He feels fucked up. He's also looking at the place he's in, and then he keeps going. The Zone is all these places around the Mediterranean, around the Holy Land. And then he's thinking about the wars in World War I, and he keeps relating back to Iliad, back to older wars, and we're repeating the wars over and over again. I was going to say, Matthias Nard's favorite thing is being with the girl and walking up to a statue and then just doing a 7-page rant about the history of the statue and then going back and be like, and she was wearing these, you know, leggings and her sweet.
I was like, that's
Matthias Nard's mode, dude. His favorite thing is pulling up to a statue and then just like going crazy on her about all his knowledge. But then
go ahead.
Yeah.
You
go off.
No, so him and Sarah in Compass are walking around. He just
What page?
This is 321.
Oh, in Compass.
Right, so in Compass.
Dude,
so
this is where I got up to. Yeah. This is what I was reading when you pulled up.
So he pulls up and he goes to see her at her thesis thing or whatever. And then he sees her and he goes, of course, I should not have pointed out right away that she had lost a lot of weight, that she was pale, her eyes lined, that wasn't very clever. But I was so surprised by these physical transformations, so pushed to futility by anguish that I couldn't help myself. And the day, that day I had brought about, worked on, waited for, imagined, started off in a lamentable footing. Sarah was annoyed. She tried not to show it. And then they go to Hediat's apartment.
Yeah, they go to Hediat's apartment, the blind owl.
And then finally she goes, and he's blabbing like he always does. She just kept a Franz? Sticky silence while I lurched into hysterical chatter. And then she goes, Franz, you're getting on my nerves. It's incredible. You've been talking without interruption for 2 kilometers. Good Lord, how talkative you can be.
Oh, my God, dude.
That's so funny.
Dude.
He pulls up.
She's just ranting. Dude, that's
Good Lord, how talkative
you can
be.
That's me for real. I'm all like, yo, listen to this. I'm going to read all this.
No, I was like, you know, I feel that.
Annoying
a girl.
Pulling up somewhere. Just like, just going. How history repeats itself.
But what were you talking about?
So I was going to say, like, so the scene is shrunk. And then there's. In both cases. Well, Compass and Zone. I mean, and you could say the first part of. And the first and last part.
Compass and Zone are kind of the same book.
They're
kind of
similar.
Ways,
So really funny, similar. I finished Zone, I started reading, I literally was bodying that. Yeah. Because I read the first 150 pages first on my phone. I had to reread them.
Yeah.
But I wanted to reread them. Yeah. But I was like, this is so easy to read, because Zone is just like, dude, once you start going on a side rant, you're like, bro, what, dude? He's like, this arm. But I was going to say, like, the knowledge aspect, man's goes crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and I often say that when people are doing creative writing, like, what do you know about that uniquely know about?
Yeah.
Right? So I'll be like, oh, I have certain experiences that I feel like other people don't know about that help you understand, you know, what the character is going through. Rio, whatever. This fool just knows so much about the history of about history.
Yeah.
So like, I was like, and then what you want to do is start looking at whatever your like knowledge bank is, you know, and have the reader be able to connect it to how it's helping you understand
everything else, the memories,
the
current scene,
what he's going through in the scene.
And he does an amazing job.
He does an amazing. He almost goes too far. Yeah. Like, and then what's the anchor? What's the main thread? And I feel like the reason why, and I feel like a zone sometimes just like, I mean, it's part of, it's like a modernist ambitious ass book. I think it's so fucking sick, dude. And sometimes you cause I stopped a couple times a zone, but I've just been bodying Compass even though I didn't finish it.
For sure. That's how I feel too. Again. You know, when you're reading Zone, you got to stop sometimes, especially since it's like this guy got decapitated.
Exactly.
You
know? I know. He's like, and they all,
and they had, you know, a word that comes up again and again, that is that enucleation. Do you see that?
Yeah,
which I think is when you take an eye, someone's eye out, right? I didn't look it up. I meant to look it
Jesus
up.
Jesus Christ, dude.
You know, yeah. And so, yeah. But you know, yeah, it's savage.
Yeah, it's savage. It's savage. But you want, but yeah. So you want to have the thing you can come back to, whether it's the scene or the memory. Like, and in Zone, he's also, it's his younger book, it's 36. So it is, you come back to, the damn train. Right?
Yeah.
And it's sick every time you come back. And you go back, but he's remembering, he's about to go see a woman, Sashka, and then he has like three different.
Yeah, it's Sashka, Marianne,
and Stephanie.
And Stephanie.
So he's like.
And his mom a little bit.
And his mom a little bit, yeah. So he's remembering, and her little older piano students that would come over when he's a little boy. I'm taking so long to make this point. The point is, in Compass, it's like masterful because the memory that kind of ties it all back together is his loss of his woman, Sarah.
Yeah.
But she was like a grad student in something a little bit different. But you know that has crossovers to his damn rants.
For sure. So yeah, like, exactly. They were experiencing all that together. That's how they related to each other. All that knowledge of
exactly.
Because he's a musicologist.
He's a musicologist. You know,
he knows a lot about. But it's kind of musical, the whole thing.
It is
right.
Musical.
You know, because it's all these, you know, tones, and I mean, I don't know how a symphony works, but there's all sorts of different threads of sound, right? That all echo and reverberate with each other and harmonize to make something.
Yeah, for sure. Damn.
But yeah, go ahead.
No, but I was gonna say.
See, this is Inardian though. You roll off, do something else, and you come back to the main thread, try to impart some knowledge.
Yeah, in Compass, he's looking at a lot of people's biographies of these different.
Yeah,
look, I said it. Yeah, and I was gonna. That's what made me stall was how I gotta see how this book ends, dude.
Yeah,
you could tell me, but. How Sarah, she's like all obsessed with all, you know, death and
because the spark of the
depression
book
and
is that she sent him
suicide.
I might have to tell you how the book goes.
Tell me how.
But so the spark of the book, right, is that she sends him an article about these.
Okay, let's start with Compass.
Yeah, okay. She sends him an article.
He's in Vienna in a hotel room.
It's in his apartment.
Oh, it's in his apartment.
Yeah. He's from Vienna. And his name's Franz Ritter. Yeah. Does that remind you of anything? Hans Ritter.
Oh, my God. Dude.
It's got to be 2666, right?
True.
Because, I mean, I think there's a whole Bologna thing going on. And, you know, a thread, you know, the Bologna influence.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of influence. Well, obviously, he knows a lot of fucking books. You know, just by reading it. But anyway, Sarah sends him an article that she wrote about these people in this community. It's Sarawak.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And these people make wine out of corpses and they drink.
Whoa.
It's the wine of the dead, right? And he's kind of freaked out about all this because he just got news from his doctor that he's probably going to die. And he hasn't seen Sarah in a while. They've known each other for a long time.
Damn,
and he was madly in love with her. So he's up all night. He can't sleep because he thinks he's going to die. He's wondering, Sarah sent him this fucking creepy shit. You know, the dog and the upstairs neighbors scratching at the ground, you know.
Yeah.
And so he's just up all night thinking.
Can't sleep, bro.
Yeah, thinking about his memories with Sarah, thinking about the, you know, the shit he knows, his travels in he spent a lot of time in the Middle East, in Syria, in Iran.
He was a pussy and didn't fucking make a move.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a big thing that, you know, kept coming up all the time in Zone and Compass was this theme of cowardice. You know, all the time, I think it's Francis. See, Franz and Francis, it's the same name too. It's the same book, you know, but it's a different book. You know, it's different, but it's, you know, it's the same idea.
Same, but different.
But they're both cowards in a lot of different ways.
Well, yeah.
And, okay, what do you think of that?
About Zone and
yeah.
Well, yeah.
He calls himself a coward all the time.
Yeah, but I mean,
and he calls
also
other
fucking
people cowards.
Yeah, but
he fucks people up and
he kills people.
Yeah, he was a brutal
dude,
soldier.
What, oh shit, we're gonna find our rhythm on this, but you know that's why it's Iliad.
Tell me why it's Iliad. Maybe we should start with Zone. Yeah, just go chronological. But Yeah, the radiators making noise. Okay, so Zone. Yeah, we kind of introduced it a little bit.
With Zone?
Yeah, right? It's a soldier. He's Croatian, right? You know, go ahead. It's the Iliad. It's a modern Iliad.
Okay, well, in the Iliad, Achilles, like they pull... This is... Okay.
Yeah.
They pull up on Achilles and... what's his boy's name again?
Patroclus?
Patroclus. And the whole squad, they pull up on Troy to fight, like, Hector and him. And... But basically... And they get kind of fucked up, and then Patroclus gets killed. And then, like, I think the war, like, kind of ends.
Yeah.
But, like, Achilles is so pissed.
Yeah, because he didn't want to fight. But right? I was halfway through, and he wasn't fighting because he was all mad at Agamemnon. Oh, okay. Right?
He starts fighting, bro.
Yeah.
And he can't let it go.
Yeah.
And he fucking pulls up on Hector and mercs Hector. It's revenge for killing his friend. But there's a part late in Zone. Remember his friend?
Yeah, his friend Andy. He got killed shitting.
So this dude's on a plane, on a train, remembering all of his failures with women.
Yeah.
Thinking back on, with the whole briefcase full of like all these.
Yeah.
Secrets of like
war crime stuff. Yeah.
War criminals. Evidence on war criminals. But he also was in war. And
for 18 months in the Balkans.
Yeah, and his friend got killed.
Yeah,
and then at the around the
while
end,
he was taking a shit, he got fucking shit.
Damn,
murked.
Dude, some of those recon missions were told so sick. I know, dude, when they fucked the guy up.
Yeah. Oh, how dude, about it?
They're on the hillside.
And, yeah,
this is also very Inardian too. Because what he does, like, he turns like somebody's biography. He's also taking shots at an insane amount of, like, real people here.
Yeah.
I didn't know Burroughs killed his wife.
Yeah, by accident.
Oh, wow.
He does, too, because that's part of the big project is the domestic violence, too.
Right. Oh, yeah, because what does he do? What does the character do?
Well,
that one night he...
Wait, I'll pull that up. Yeah, I'll pull that up because that's representative.
Yeah.
No, but go ahead. Talk about Burroughs.
Yeah, Burroughs, and then he also says... Burroughs killed, and obviously Malcolm Lowry like hit his wife.
Yeah, he tried to strangle her to death.
So then, whenever he thinks of like a city, he starts going on these rants about like the history of that city and the other writers who like lived there and their lives and the wars that happened there. But that was the main Iliad thing.
Okay, Stephanes works with him, and you know after he's done being a soldier, he goes and works in. You know, as a spy or whatever, he's working at this government agency, and that's where he meets Stephanie, and she works as an agent too, but she's all prim. She's I think she's Parisian, right? She's up class, and she's
kind of cure him of his trauma.
Yeah, she's
they're just really good. Fuck, what is it, dude?
Huh?
It's about
Wait, but okay.
Go ahead. My bad.
So
my bad.
She's obsessed with his time in the war, and he doesn't want to talk about it, of course. So she pulls up a documentary about the war and just like trying to goad him into saying something.
She wants him to spill his trauma, and so she can she can cure him and then control him.
So she goes, she's pragmatic. She's curious. She wants to know, and this is how it goes. You know, there is a bang, bang, you know. She wants to understand. She wants to put herself in my place. She insists. And what's it like to kill someone with a small page? 323 in Zone? What's it like to kill someone with a small, hesitant voice, almost beseeching? So I explode. I think of Lowry and Marjorie in Sicily. I say to her, you'll see for yourself. I get up. I find the Yugoslav 765 in the wardrobe. Stephanie is dumbfounded like a good conjurer. I hand her the weapon. I show her the cartridges in the clip. I shove the breech, lift the safety, catch. I say to her, you see, there's a bullet in the chamber. She's paralyzed with fear. I go over to her. I say, you want to know what it's like to kill someone? So I grab her by the wrist. I put the gun in her hand. She doesn't react. I place my finger next to hers in the trigger. She doesn't understand. She's paralyzed with fear and surprise. I stick the muzzle in my mouth. Stephanie shouts, no, no, no. She fights. I put pressure on her finger. She presses despite herself on the release, shouting, no. Instinctively, she hits me with a terrific left jab worthy of Zeus in the mouth. The pistol goes click, and that's it. Because it was just, you know, the pistol didn't work, but he wanted to scare her.
He scared the shit out of her. Stephanie collapses, too. She's hiccuping as she sobs. She looks as if she's going to throw up. She's curled on the ground. Her hair hides her face, and I leave her lying alongside the little black Zastava, the gun with no firing pin. He goes running down the stairs, runs across the bridge, goes to a damn whorehouse or something.
Yeah.
Starts getting blackout.
No, that's he's crazy. Man's with wild. That too.
But then this also comes right before, this comes right after, yeah, the story of Malcolm Lowry
strangling his wife.
Strangling his wife.
Yeah.
But then.
Where's that at? Do you want to read some of that?
Well,
or what?
That was earlier, but on that same page you read.
Yeah.
See, this is another. I mean, this is like actually where a lot of my what a lot of my notes were about when I was reading Zone was just like, I guess the general idea of just things being wrought, just like a certain amount of okayness in the world, just being wrought out of complete fucking confrontation with. Just, you know, horror and death.
Yeah.
And then, some people out here just eating off it and specifically trying to block out.
Yeah.
The whatever direct tie you have.
Yeah.
To the trauma and the real shit that led to it, you know, and, you know, right above that, it goes, I'm not watching the screen. She's trying to make her watch. She's trying to make him watch some shit. So be like, oh, are you triggered? Like, tell me about it. Then I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
I'll be your. One of the women was like a mom. I think that might have been Marianne, actually.
Yeah.
But it just goes, I'm not watching the screen. I'm plunged into my memories. I've understood that they'll never find out who killed Paul Jenks. They'll never know. I keep drinking, leaving Stephanie to her disgust with mercenary soldiers, Slavonic hail at the end of the tape. She stays silent while she hesitates to ask me questions. She doesn't know where to begin. Suddenly she realizes something. She says, so you killed people?
Yeah.
And I'm...
Son. Do that
voice. That's what that's you, killed people? And I'm flabbergasted. This cultivated mind is incapable of admitting that she, too, is touched indirectly by violence, splattered by my actions. This civil servant who prepares strategic options for the French army doesn't realize there is at the other end of her work. No, I spent a few months gathering mushrooms and singing dirty songs.
I feel, and he's funny, I feel like that, a mute too,
rage rising in me. What exactly does she want to know? But how many? It reminds me of those teenage trysts when you ask, so how many guys? So you've slept with how many guys? Yeah. I have no idea. Stephanie is stubborn, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a big part of, I think, the project of this book. Because if you look in the back, he thanks a bunch of people whose stories he used. And he names names in the book. Yeah. Like, the characters' names are people he interviewed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he went around collecting these stories from, like, the Balkans and stuff like that of people who were in that war. Like, here he says, early in the book, I'm a savage, brutal and coarse, who despite all the civilized threads that all the books I've read have clothed me in, remains a wild primitive, capable of slitting an innocent person's throat, of strangling a female and eating with my hands. And then he's talking about how my father looked at me strangely the last few years. He saw the uncouth brute behind the functionary from the Ministry of Defense. He guessed for almost 10 years to what point my savagery might have gone, and even at his last hour, ill, pale on a sickbed, he couldn't keep from staring at me, scrutinizing me with his gaze to remove my jacket, my shirt, my highly civilized human shell, and lay bare my hairy chest in ritual scarrings. And then he shows up late to his dad's funeral, and he goes the wrong plot, and he's all drunk and hungover. He's really a mess.
And wait, what page is that?
That was 164.
Because that's when the Malcolm Lowry story.
Yeah,
is.
You're
it's
right.
Around 170.
Yeah.
But oh yeah, dude, I literally marked that exact same part. Let's go, dude.
Yeah, and then
okay, yeah,
so might as well talk about the way the Stephanie thread kind of culminates.
Yeah, well that's right? When the savage stuff comes back.
You know, that's 478 is when it starts. So he pulls up from a trip. You know, he's on.
Aloud to somebody. You want to read it?
Yeah, I'll read some of it.
Okay, read some of it.
So he pulls up. You know, he was just on a trip collecting information. These trips, and he. He gets all drunk. He probably fucks whores, you know, whatever he does on these trips because he's all fucked up. Yeah. But so he gets there and she comes to his house. And
it's one of the greatest stretches of writing.
I know. It really
is. Like,
I heard it's 478 is when it starts. Yeah. I heard her climbing the stairs a little anxious. Why was she coming? Maybe one of those proofs of love that you plug the cracks with. A surprise. She came in smiling and kissed me tenderly, saying just surprise. She asked me if I had a good trip. And then, you know, she's looking, and he doesn't get why he's there.
Yeah.
And he goes, I hazarded, I forgot your birthday? Is that it? She gave a slightly false laugh. How stupid can you be? She simpered. Almost inane all of a sudden. She was all giddy, and now he says that. And she was at a loss. Looked for a place to sit down, decided to remain standing. I had a foreboding of something despite myself. I didn't say anything. She chatted. I handed her the little transparent crystal star from Bohemia that I had bought for her. The object carved by the slaves in Greek, wrapped up in red tissue paper. I said, look, this is for you. She said, oh, that's nice. Thanks, thanks. And she was so nervous as she tore open the wrapping that the trinket fell down. That got on my nerves for some reason. And he's so good with that. Like these little, like that got on my nerves. She dropped my trinket. I picked up the gleaming star saying, hey, watch out. And I was holding it when Stephanie whispered, I'm expecting a baby. And let herself slide into the armchair, looking at me intensely. I didn't say anything. I wasn't sure I'd understood. The usual phrase was, I'm pregnant, and not, I'm expecting a baby. I handed her the little glass star. You almost broke it.
You almost broke it.
Her eyes misted over a little. She murmured, that's all you have to say? We were on opposite sides of a river, making incomprehensible signs to each other. I replied, and you? I felt absolutely nothing at this announcement. Nothing. Four unreal words. I turned my head away. She said, I'm such an idiot. We never keep our mouths shut at the right time. I stammered, no, no. She got up and muttered, I knew I shouldn't have come. I repeated, no, no. She got annoyed. She shouted, am I leaving or staying? We never keep our mouths shut at the right time. I sighed, whatever you like. She trembled and went out almost running, leaving me alone with the Prague star still between my fingers. And then she doesn't come back, of course. And, you know, I mean, you could read that, like...
Well, this is one of my markers.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'm also, like, I'm trying to figure out what fate and destiny are.
Yeah.
And I got some real, real authorial, you know, cryptic bars.
Yeah.
But I just...
Yeah.
He's talking about it constantly.
Yeah, for sure.
He said, I didn't rush over to the stairway. I didn't shout, come back. I sat down in the chair to look my share of fate in the face.
Mm.
Impossible to imagine what Stephanie's word represented. Yeah. And then he goes, this triggering is, whatever.
Yeah.
You read my book. But then, then he goes, maybe we'll keep reading it.
Read. I mean, because this, honestly, pick up zone, go 478 to 482.
Goes, look, I didn't rush over her to make her come back. Impossible to imagine what Stephanie's words represented. Impossible to see what there was in her belly. I remember the last time we had slept together 4 days before, but it wasn't that coitus. It was one lost in the number of coituses of the previous weeks during the weekend in Istanbul, maybe. You can't know. Did Stephanie know? What was there to know? It was there in front of me. Have a child. Don't, this right here, back to the Iliad. Have a child. Don't make the choice of Achilles, the sterile, but that of Hector. Hector talks with Andromache, his wife, of the beautiful Peplos on the ramparts of Troy. Hector protected his city. His wife begs him tenderly not to go to war, not to go, not to leave the great walled Ilion, despite the cowardice of his brother Paris, the wretched fop. He sweeps her complaints away with a gesture. He says, leave the toils of war to men, for you the children, for me the keen sword. I know that I'm going to die and that Troy will fall. And that's how it is. I will have a child.
And then he goes, I saw myself with my father on my back and him with his, a pyramid of fathers as high as the ladder of St. John Climacus, all of them overlapping each other, laughing like demons at seeing their sons bending beneath them. So I got up and went to the kitchen. And then he drinks all the champagne that she brought. And then the next day he sees her, he meets with her, right? And she was very pale, defeated. She said to me, you are a monster. I know everything about you. You are a monster. I never want to see you again. How could she have changed so quickly? 2 days before she arrived at my place holding a bottle of champagne, now I was a monster. Maybe she'd hoped for a transformation, a change until the very end. Maybe she had imagined she could live with the monster. I said nothing. I looked at her with a great sadness. She left. I'd been a father for 48 hours, a monstrous father who eats his children. It was 7:30. I ordered a plum brandy. Then he gets all drunk. You know.
He gets all drunk. Yeah.
Damn.
No, but basically, the part you glossed over was like... she leaves. He goes and realizes what she put in the refrigerator was a bottle of champagne. Then he just starts getting drunk. He realizes he can't have the child, or he realizes that she's going to get an abortion.
Yeah, because
I called without success for what was that?
No, go ahead.
I called without success for 24 hours. I was shaken, anxious, and happy. I kept calling her because I think he decides he wants to have.
Yeah, because definitely at the end he feels like he should have.
But initially, at night, and then he goes, He goes, I was afraid I'd wounded her, frightened her like a wild animal. The wild animal was my father. It was me. My father was right. Old Priam was right. She couldn't have the child with the barbarian. Yeah. The choice of Achilles is no choice.
Because
if you're Achilles and you're just a fucking killer and you're just getting, you're just like getting revenge.
And Achilles was fate bound in the whole Iliad, right? Because his mom told him, I don't know, you know, whatever, the people who know the Greek stuff, you know, they, she told him, if you fight in the war, you're going to die. Right? If you don't fight, you'll go home and you'll be okay. But if you fight in the war, you will die. Right? So that's part of why he wasn't fighting. He was like, I'm not going to die for you, Agamemnon. Right? Damn. You know, so he's fate bound. Yeah. You know, he couldn't have done differently. And I think he feels at the end he was a coward for not reacting differently in that moment. He wasn't, you know, because I think he feels like so fate bound and, you know, the whole, the original sin thing, right?
Yeah.
The Immaculate Conception. Oh, yeah. He can't have a baby that's not going to be damaged by his sins, by all this whole weight of violence and sin that came before him. So he feels like he's not strong enough to bring someone in who's going to repeat all that.
Yeah.
You know, and in that moment, he can't say anything, but he can't say anything. You know, that, but man, and art's so good at those moments, especially like, in a relationship, you know, with, you know, just fucking up and saying the wrong thing in the moment and ruining it.
He he's got a good male gaze.
Yeah, he does. he has a good male gaze.
He's somewhere in between me and Welbeck.
Yeah.
He doesn't go all the way. No, because another thing is he's writing about like, yeah, in some ways there is this element of like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was hitting for me because I'm just like, I don't know. It's just like, what? When's the last? Whatever. We're just removed from war.
Yeah.
You know, especially how war tactics even are now.
Yeah.
They're just removed, you know?
Yeah, but for sure.
And it's like, people are always like, what? You're, you know, you think you're at war? And I'm like, bro, like, this shit doesn't just come out of, you know? So there's that element of sort of like, he's telling these like gnarly stories and it's like very like, Iliad masculine energy where it's just
for
like,
sure
like I'm a fucking savage, you know, there, it had some like fuckboy energy, like some like damn I'm a piece of shit,
yeah, he's definitely a savage. Then like early on he's in that bar and he's all drunk and he goes up to that woman who's like in her 60s and he's like hitting on her and she's kind of like me like
and then he
fucks her and he's all like it's they both hate each other,
you know, I just read the part with Sarah. When he has that dream of being on like a ship with Sarah,
and
naked him, and he has so many layers of just academic knowledge that it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, damn. I guess you got to be real clever with the.
Yeah, no, but, I mean,
but I was gonna say it's not. It's also another sick ass thread of Zone that is just like, he's on. Yeah, and then every time, I mean, dude, there's some about that. Like, the more you shrink the real time scene,
yeah,
it's like when you come back to it. I don't know. You need that real-time scene.
For sure.
You need that real-time scene.
Yeah.
Scaffolding. For sure. But otherwise, that story of remembering the memory of Stephanie, like this is oral. It's urgently telling you
for
like,
sure.
the story that's been fucking
stuck
in your gut for fucking ever. And you just, you know, but it hanging on something. But it's not all just like, you know, like I'm this dude and then these women, you know.
For sure. It's not like that at all.
He's reading a book the whole time.
Yeah.
He's trying to read this book. And the it's book like this too. Novel about this like.
It's these.
This woman, Intisar. Who's
Palestinian
like
fighters
Palestinian
in the Lebanese
fighter,
Civil War.
The Lebanese
is
Civil
what it
War.
Is.
And she's like a savage.
Yeah. And
but,
her, the love of her life dies.
Love of her life dies also.
Right. And she goes and. And gets
and
then, his body.
And he's all reading it, and he's like, this is hitting for me.
Yeah.
This is like it's like the podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I swear to God.
Yeah.
No,
he's like beautiful and Intisar, you know,
What'd you say?
No, he's like reacting to it. He's like, beautiful Intisar, it's such a good story.
No,
the
he's
brave,
like, Intisar is me for real.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Because she's like, basically, his love of his life dies.
And then he's like.
Her corpse, and he's cleaning
Yeah, he's
corpse.
Like, I wish I could have cleaned. Andy's
and
body.
That happened to his
you
bro.
Know, yeah.
And he literally says that. He's like, damn, like the synchronicities are crazy.
Yeah.
He's like, he does. That's like me, dude. Or that's like the part. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. But she's like a savage, but also the guys are trying to fuck her and her too. In the story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
And there's, you know, there's you didn't get to it yet in Compass. It's like 365. So we get this whole, you know, it's what it is it's a story that, not a story, but it's Franz wrote it after he came back from Iran. Okay. He's remembering this night. It starts on 357. He's remembering this night in Iran when Iran.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Sarah's thesis advisor, that guy who's he's an old dude who's got a lusty gaze. He's telling this story. He's telling this story about when he was there for the revolution in Iran when he was young.
Yeah.
Right? And he fell in love. He knew this guy who was French. This guy, I forget his name. But he got so into Iranian culture, and I mean, he could speak Persian perfectly, and he was like a poet, and he started using a name, like an Iranian name.
Okay.
And he fell in, like, he started dating this girl who, it was like Intisar and that Marwan, right? Their relationship. They were like revolutionaries.
But the thesis
advisor, I mean, when you get to this, it's going to hit for you.
Yeah.
But the thesis advisor is telling the story of he met this woman and he fell in love with her and he was trying to, like, you know, get with her. And so he talked to the authorities and he got the guy sent away. Her boyfriend, who was Iranian, he got him sent away, and then he, like, you know, it's alluded that he, like, raped her and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was just pressing that, and he was in love with her, and he's telling this story to Franz and Sarah while they're all drunk one night.
Yeah.
They're, you know, Sarah's all embarrassed that he's telling this. She can't believe it. And Franz is like, you know, he wants to know what happened between him and this woman.
Yeah.
You know, but the guy ended up hanging himself, and then the woman never talked to him again.
Damn.
No, but... Yeah, it was a lot like the Intisar and Marwan story, because the guy, so Intisar was with that guy, and then his friend, like, tried to rape her, and she ended up killing him.
This, the protagonist's zone is on the train reading this novel about the, and then it shows the actual text of the novel.
Yeah, so that's a cool thing, too, the way he does the intertextual
and
stuff.
And same in Compass.
Yeah.
It's the actual
text of the thesis
that she's sending him.
Yeah, he does it a lot more in Compass with the intertextual stuff. But
in Zone, it's about he's carrying all this trauma of, like, been in war.
Yeah.
His friend died. His grief, too.
Yeah.
And the trauma
of
having murked a guy in war. Or, you know, people in war. And then he's on this night train. Where is it from again?
It's from
Istanbul to Rome?
No, not
Istanbul.
From,
that's too far.
I forget
far.
Where he starts. I think for Milan. I think it's Milan to Rome.
It's a 12-hour night train.
Yeah, 500 kilometers, 500 pages.
Yeah, and he's about to turn in all the documents. Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Turn in all the documents to on all these war criminals.
Yeah.
But then he ends up, and then he's like realizing he's getting his hopes up about this new girl, Sashka, who's going to make
He's getting she thinks that he's a like an insect scientist. What do you call them? The entomologist or something?
Oh, yeah, entomologist?
Yeah. She thinks that's what he does, that he's just a little bug collector.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he told her. And she paints icons, you know, more Catholic stuff.
Okay, that's another thing. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, she paints icons, but that's the same as in Septology.
Yeah.
His dead wife?
Yeah.
Else?
Did she paint icons?
She's an icon. She paints saints.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But
she paints saints, but he's, like, not a saint. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, but he pulls up, and then he kind of goes, like, oh, I'm just trying to, like, make her my, he kind of says, fuck it at the end.
Yeah, of Zone?
Yeah.
Yeah, so at the end
and
of Zone.
And he says, fuck this suitcase,
see,
fuck
he,
everything.
Yeah, that's what he said. He's going to throw it into the damn.
And it keeps changing. What about this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Random epigraph at the end of the book from Ezra Pound. To confess wrong without losing rightness.
So this charity is kind of what got me into the book in the first place.
Okay, go ahead.
Was the first epigraph is from the first canto. And at the end, it's the last canto
of
Pound's
cantos,
right? The first epigraph, it's the first four lines from the cantos.
Oh, yeah.
It's and then went down to the ship, set keel to breakers forth on the godly sea, and we set up mast and sail on that swart ship, board sheep aboard her and our bodies also.
Damn.
Which is the first lines from the Cantos, which is a translation from the Odyssey.
Right. That's right. Well, I got a book for you, too. Don't,
oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. But, yeah, and then the last one. I really like that.
Yeah,
that
to confess wrongs, to confess wrong without losing rightness, charity have I had sometimes. I cannot make it flow through. A little light, like a rushlight, to lead black back to splendor. But to confess wrong without losing rightness. It is about confession.
Yeah, it
is. And he tells the whole story about Malcolm Lowry, who wrote Under the Volcano, getting all fucking blackout and choking his wife, right?
Yeah.
And then
she left him one night, and she came back to found him dead.
Whoa, dude. That's what happened?
Yeah, he drank himself to death.
Fuck, dude. And then, but then he says, the narrator says, like, yeah, the whole gnarly story you read with, like, Stephanie and scaring the shit out of her with his gun.
Yeah, he's confessing.
He's confessing.
Like
he tries to kill himself. He jumps in the river one time.
Yeah, he does. And he
says someone grabs him, pulls him out. He might have been imagined it.
Yeah. And just how the threads work. Like, he's talking about Caravaggio a lot and Caravaggio's decapitations, right? Mm, the decapitations.
Yeah.
And then that all culminates with, where was it? It's toward the end, but where he decapitates it's on 500, where he tells a story of there was a guy, a soldier, a Bosnian soldier, who was like laughing at him, and he decapitated him just out of anger and revenge.
Yeah, he said he was like the village idiot.
Yeah. The village idiot.
That was the culminating.
Yeah.
Confession.
So he's doing Caravaggio the whole time, thinking about these heads, and you know, it's all threaded throughout. Like, everything's there. Like, early on, even. Say something.
Yeah. But. Damn, dude, some funny ass scenes in here.
No, it is kind of funny too. Like, when he's
when he's all fucking.
How about when his mom's teaching piano lessons?
Yeah, that part is gold.
Wait, well, I'll pull it up. It's 178.
178? Dude, I really just got to read the most perverted part just so the kids can start reading.
Read 178. All right,
dude. 178 is so funny, dude. God, why is it, dude? Yeah. He's talking about his sister. I swear to God, dude. What year did this come out? I think it's Full Red Fuckboy, dude. I think he's copying Fuckboy. All right, I gotta chill. That's not even a funny. Okay, 56. All right, we're good. No one's gonna. His mom is a concert pianist, and his older sister, or his sister, is like all good at piano, and he's like a little kid, and he's like.
And they bring girls over to.
Yeah. So he goes like, Lita Spencer today, listen to him. She go. Yeah, I remember one.
What page you on?
177. Is that where it starts?
No, the next one, I think. 178.
Oh, okay, bet. Well, basically, he's saying, like, yeah, she greeted me. Yeah, basically. Okay, I got to stop reading and just say it. Yeah, his mom brings over these other girls to teach them piano when he's a little boy. And, he's like remembering them. I remember one precisely. She must have been 3 years older than me and came twice a week at around 5 or 6 o'clock. I was just getting back from school. She always wore a skirt. She was a little plump with a round face, long blonde hair tied back. She greeted me nicely when I hurried to open the door to her. I took her duffel coat and I observed her breasts. They seemed giant to me. I breathed in the smell of her coat as I hung it up. And I watched her walk into the study, the piano room, which we called the study, her music scores and notebooks in hand. I spied, with the door ajar, on the girl approaching my mother, to see how she settled down by the piano and lifted her skirt sometimes to position herself on the stool, a mechanical gesture, a terribly erotic second for me. I thought I could glimpse her underwear through her wool stockings. I felt the friction of her buttocks against the burgundy felt, the movement of her thigh when she leaned on the pedal. I got a terrible erection, an immense desire that drove me to the bathroom as a Liszt etude or a Chopin Polonaise. She was gifted, resounded. The rhythm of her fingers on the keyboard must have been, I imagine, my own or my personal instrument in desire and in music. While I hated Liszt, Chopin, and all those horrible maternal notes, I came terribly too quickly. The desired student was made to start again of her tempo, and it was my mother's voice more than once that interrupted my pleasure with her, "No, no, not so fast, not so fast," from the neighboring room. She seemed to be directing my masturbation herself. Start over, start over. With so that. Funny, yeah, dude.
No, that's hilarious.
No. Yeah,
and her dad's, and then she gets in a fight. Yeah. He gets in a fight with his sister, and is all like holding her down.
Yeah, and then her dad goes, "You're a savage. Yeah, you're a savage. Leave your sister alone." And that was funny. His mother goes, "No, your son is not a savage."
Yeah, and then.
But he is a savage. He confesses himself.
He characterizes different women. And one time he goes like, "Marianne was like wanted to be my mom." Like,
yeah,
Stephanie was like all like trying to culture me. She was like come from like a you know.
It's funny. The attitudes toward women are different in Zone and Compass, right? Oh. In some ways, like they're similar in a lot of ways, like in just how he describes relationships so well, and he describes desire really well, and like fucking up, and you know what you're supposed to say and what you're not. But Francis is like, you know, I mean, he's a soldier, he's a brute, right?
Right.
I mean, he fucks around. He has multiple women, you
right.
know.
And this is 30. Yeah. Yeah. 36. It's like, I didn't finish that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
My bad. Well, no. Just like trauma or whatever. PTSD is the word I'm looking
for. For sure.
Not trauma, you know, PTSD damn near from all shit. And then he's looking at different women. And then the catharsis is like turning away from all that. And war.
Yeah.
It's so like PTSD is his own thing. Like I was doing that structure earlier or whatever. And then looking at war. And yeah, like someone asked me, like, how much is like generational trauma or like, whatever. I shouldn't keep saying things I'm writing for like, interviews, but everything is genealogy. Like,
yeah, true.
Especially the early books. Like, this is not only his own genealogy repeating, it's the genealogy of place. He always does it. There's a place, there's a war, and he relates it to earlier wars
for sure.
that happened before.
It's all, you know, the soil the sins of springs before. Everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so, yeah.
Yeah, go
my
ahead.
Bad. And just no, to say, no, with no, Compass, it's not Trump. It's ill. He's 42 now.
Yeah.
It's illness and... And he's looking at not war. He's looking at a lot of composers because he's a musicologist, right?
Yeah.
But he's also looking at writers, and he's looking
and
at
people
melancholia.
Mad in love.
Yeah,
people mad in love.
He says the Brazilian word saudade.
Yeah, saudade.
Saudade.
It comes from, and we find out at the
melancholy.
End, it comes from.
It's about melancholy. Yeah.
It comes from. They think the Arabic sawad, which means black bile.
Wow.
You know, so you're filled with black bile if you got saudade.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You and know. it's that, dude, there's some, and it's the longing. It's like being up.
Yes.
It's her writing, and he's all like, bro, some of the, and then he gets into the, some of the memories with Sarah are fucking so
no,
good.
No,
so dude.
So Franz is a lot sweeter than Francis.
That's what I'm
the
saying.
Soldier.
He's
sweet.
He's sick.
Like,
yeah,
he's actually sweet.
He's sweet. He's all, he's.
Francis
he's
is
sick.
He's just trying to figure. You know, and I think at the end
that's
of,
how it's going
to
be. My first book, I'm a savage. Second book, I'm a real,
you're
real
sweetie.
Sweet, real sweet boy.
at the end of Zone, when he decides, you know, he's not going to go see Sashka, and he throws the suitcase into the... That seems like a kind of catharsis in some way, right?
Absolutely.
Where he's letting go of war. He's letting go of these
breaking
women are going to save him.
But that's what Faulkner trying to do every book,
true.
Too. That's how
break
he's...
Break the chain.
Yeah, near, I mean... To
yeah, it is Faulkner.
You could even
I mean,
say,
it's Faulked out.
Yeah.
You know?
You could even say... What elementary particles is like that.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it's a little, you know, he a little more, whatever. But it, I mean, it's totally, but then, damn.
But yeah, so it's funny that in, I mean, it's Zone, that's about as happy as an ending you could get for a book, you know, brutal like that. But all these books have happy endings.
They do?
Yeah, yeah.
So he sees Sarah at the end? He's got
so,
her, right?
No, okay. Does so let's do.
Should we? Yes. Transition to
Compass.
To Compass.
Yeah. Let's talk about Compass.
Okay, let's talk about Compass.
How deep?
We're at an hour. Should we switch over, or should we go a little longer?
Oh, let's go a little longer. We might as well talk about Compass a little.
Okay.
But okay. So let me give you. So.
Okay.
So you know, Franz.
We get the blind owl real early on. You go.
Yeah.
Ahead.
So
I'm
we get a
rock.
Lot of.
I'm gonna let you rock on this.
No, and that's funny. Like, no, it's not. But you know, reading Zone and this and the. Gravediggers, it's just like, God, like, there's so much to read. There's so much to learn. Like, it makes me feel like, God, I just want to learn stuff, you know?
Dude, like, that's like what I was saying about, being in a state of reverence.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's...
This puts me in such a good headspace. I've been writing so much.
Yeah, that's how I was feeling, too. I was charged up.
Damn.
You know? But, and see, it's all, like, real erudite, right? And he knows, but he always comes back to the human stories, and that's what's interesting. About it, right? He always comes back to
romantic stories.
Yeah, the romantic stories too. That's what gets me. Is that's the romantic what it is. Story?
Are you?
They're all romantic stories.
Yeah. If yeah, dude.
He's a romantic. You know, he's a French. You know.
Yeah, but he's looking at his relationships, his interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, and then with the heightened intimacy of an interpersonal relationship, maybe that's why this is hitting harder, because it's they're more seamlessly connected. Like the reports on the war criminals is obliquely connected to him spazzing on his girl.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Oh, well, no.
But the text of her writing, they have an intellectual. Dude, for some of the intimacy of writing, sharing.
Yeah.
I mean, dude.
Yeah, and then
it's not just nerds being
like the last
up.
The last 100 pages is or the last like 70 is a lot of their letters back and forth.
Wow. Dude.
So you'll like that. But
okay, you go on uncomfortable.
Yeah, let's go. So you read the part where they're in the desert and they're sleeping together in the tent.
That's
right?
The best fucking part.
Yeah,
dude.
That's so.
I was literally dead off that part.
So wait, where is that part? Do you know where it is off the top of your head?
Yeah, dude.
I thought it was there, but
it's so funny. Like he going back to his spot. He's just like, "Fuck, am I gonna make tea? It's fucking late as fuck, dude. This is like me, dude, for last night."
And then he goes. So they're together in Damascus, right? And he's. He tries to go up to her hotel.
Okay, that's late. Yeah, that's later.
Yeah,
yeah.
But no, when they're sleeping together, that's because they're traveling together, right?
There's just one funny ass story. My favorite part so far in the book.
Yeah, go ahead.
Whatever. Was just when they're like traveling around. They're in Damascus. They go to some like historical site or something.
Yeah.
And they wait till it closes or the tourists.
Yeah, they're
sleep.
Out in the desert.
They're out in the desert. They sleep in this little. They sleep outside. It's like this little damn tent. And they're all spooning, and he has a whole rant about how spooning is the most intimate thing.
Yeah.
I gotta find that, dude.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to find,
the whole
too.
Night,
that's so good.
He's just like, my face is like in her hair. He's like, I'm trying to fucking. But he's like such a good little academic.
Yeah.
He doesn't
He's
do
really
it.
Sweet.
Yeah,
and
then they get woken up to tourists. It reminded me of sleeping outside. That happened on the walk a couple times. I wake up, people around me. I'm like, oh, shit, dude, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny that the whole book, he does.
That? No.
He never talks about being with any other girl or anything like that, or he goes on one date early,
yeah,
and with some woman from the school, and you know he thinks he's she wants to fuck him,
yeah,
and he's worried because he got underwear on that got the elastics broke,
the elastics loose,
and then
and they're
she,
pink.
Wait,
and
I want to find that too.
In front of her,
yeah, and then he's
and it's her coworker. He's all like, "Damn, dude, now."
And then she wants dessert. She wants a tiramisu, and he like clowns her for it.
Yeah.
He's like, "Why would you?"
Yeah, he's just like, he's just in his apartment, just like, stupid.
Wait, I should have.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to figure out what the compass was. He was saying in Islam, they put a damn compass on the damn
on the rug
so you know which way to
pray
to Mecca.
Yeah, see, there was compasses all the time. Right. Where was that? Damn.
Okay, so I stopped. Okay. Yeah, see, Sarah. It's also her indulgence towards female criminals, traitors, and poisoners is still a mystery. She had danger.
That's funny. She's like brooding. Out of his league. She's smarter than him.
Yeah, she's all writing all these crazy ass fucking texts about like the gnarliest people.
Yeah.
In history.
Yeah. But so okay, so wait, they spend the night together in the desert and they spoon and he doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
and then later on, he tries to go to her hotel room. Oh, did you find it?
No.
Yeah. Later on, he tries to go to her hotel room and, you know, she turns him away because she's married to this dude who's a real musician too. And he's really,
what's his name?
He's Syrian. Namid.
Namid, yeah.
I think. And he's Syrian and he's a real musician and he's so jealous of this guy.
I know.
But so eventually they later on, I'm going to spoil this for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Right?
Yeah.
So they go, they're in Iran, they're in Tehran, and they go to this, you know, they're at this party kind of, some music, they're listening to music, and they both get a little drunk on a fake concoction because they can't drink wine. So they're drinking this concoction. What are they calling it? A white Iranian or something like that.
Yeah.
And so they're on the cab ride back home. And he goes, this is 390.
Okay.
All right. She was leaning against the door, turned to the window in the night of Tehran, which was streaming past us. The driver was shaking his head to ward off sleep. The radio was blaring some slightly sinister cantilenas about dying for Palestine. Sarah's right hand lay flat on the artificial leather of the seat. And the details, too. The details are, you know, with everything.
From that place of an urgent, breathless memory of a
It's like a photographic memory. This moment was so important and intense. Right? So, okay. Her skin was the only brightness in the compartment, and I took it in mine, and I was able to catch hold of the heat and light of the world. To my great surprise, without immediately turning toward me, it was she who held my fingers tight in hers and drew my hand toward her and didn't let it go, not even when we arrived at our destination, not even hours later when the red dawn set fire to Mount Damavand and invaded my bedroom and lit up, in the midst of the sheets crisscrossed with flesh, her face made pale from fatigue, her infinitely naked back where there lays, rocked by the waves of her breath, the long dragon of vertebrae and the traces of its fire, those freckles that flowed up to the back of her neck like so many stars whose fire has been quenched, the galaxy that I journeyed across with my finger, outlining imagery, voyages, while Sarah, from the other side of her body, clutched my left hand below her breast. And I stroked her neck, illuminated by a thin pink ray of light sharpened by the Venetian blinds, as the dawn hummed, still surprised by this total intimacy, by her breath made sweet from fasting and hints of alcohol, the details too, and he's so sweet.
Yeah.
Astonished by the eternity, by the eternal possibility of finally burying myself in her hair, of traveling at leisure across her cheekbones, her lips, stunned by the tenderness of her kisses, lively and laughing, brief or profound, short of breath at having been able to let her undress me without any shame or embarrassment, blinded by her beauty, by the reciprocal simplicity of nudity, after minutes of... or hours of cloth, friction of cotton, of silk, of clasps, of tiny clumsy gestures, attempts at oblivion in the unison of body, of heart, of the Orient, in the great ensemble of desire, the great chorus of desire where so many landscapes are found, past and future. I glimpsed in the night of Tehran Sarah naked. She caressed me, I caressed her, and nothing in us sought to reassure ourselves with the word love, so deep were we in the murkiest beauty of love, which is absolute presence next to the other, in the other. Desire satisfied at every instant, renewed at every second. For every second, we found a new color to desire in this kaleidoscope of light and shade. So they finally have sex. They spend a night together after yearning. You know, the whole book
he's
yearning.
This is a memory, though?
This is a memory.
Yeah.
Right?
It's,
when they were,
it's from 5:33 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and
he's
so they.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still up.
He's still up, dude.
And so he's remembering that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they wake up, the sound of prayer wakes them up in Tehran, you know, beautiful moment.
Classic.
The next page, right? We get 6 a.m., right? 3:95. 3:95. In Tehran, at the end of the day, after that incredibly sweet night, she hopped onto the first plane to Paris. The red eye with Air France, trembling with suffering and guilt after spending the day without having closed her eyes for a minute, rushing from police station to settle those sordid visa matters Iranians excel in, armed with a piece of paper sent urgently by the French embassy attesting to the extremely serious state of her brother's health and begging the Iranian authorities to facilitate her departure, even though she had the intuitive sensation at the sound of her mother's voice that Samuel had already died, right? So she finds out the next morning, look,
that her brother died.
Her mother had called her without success all evening and into the morning, desperate, had contacted the institute, the consulate, moved heaven and earth, and finally, when Sarah, throwing me a kiss from afar, had modestly closed the bathroom door for privacy, they had come to inform me. The accident had occurred on the previous evening. The accident, the event, the discovery. No one knew anything yet. Sarah had to call her mother back at home, and it was the words at home rather than the hospital or God knows where. It was the words at home that made her sense the worst. So immediately, they spend the night together, and she wakes up the next morning, gets a call that her brother in Paris has died, and she got to get out. Right? And so a lot of the moments they have together earlier in the book where they're like—
So they start writing letters at the end?
Yeah, that he's reading their old letters from
old
after
letters.
That. But then, okay, at
does
the very
it go forward,
huh?
Does it go forward?
It does. She finally hits him back, right? So because he sends her a note. He sends her a note that says he answers her article, saying,
"Sarah took pity on me."
He said, "Dearest Sarah, I received your off print yesterday morning. I didn't know they were still printing those. Thank you very much. But how horrible, that wine of the dead. I'm worried all of a sudden. Are you doing well? What are you doing in Sarawak? Here, it's everything as usual. The Christmas market has just opened in the middle of the university. Atrocious odors of mulled wine and sausages. Do you plan on coming back through Europe soon? Send me news. Much love, Franz." And then he goes, after he writes that, he's like, "Fuck, I shouldn't have talked about the sausages. That was stupid."
Yeah, he's always like, maybe she's all fucked up. Yeah. Maybe I should write. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and then Well, and then she emails him back finally in the morning, right? It's like 7:30 a.m. She goes, Franz. And then she sends him a long email and ends it with, there's something I never told you. The last time I went to Vienna, and he's always thinking about this, when she didn't stay, she stayed at a hotel, right, instead of his house.
Yeah, exactly.
This is at 4:43. I agreed to stay in that luxury hotel they had offered me, remember, instead of sleeping at your place? That made you terribly angry. I think it was in the secret, slightly childlike hope that you'd accompany me there, that we'd resume in a beautiful unknown room what we had begun in Tehran. And then she sends him lines from a song. All of a sudden I pine for you. How beautiful Vienna is, how far away Vienna is.
Damn.
Right? And then he finally writes her back at the end, and he's, you know, spoil it for you, but you know, you'll like the and it doesn't matter, you know, Denard, you can reread this is my reread, you know, like there's a lot to take in. But anyway, he's worried about it. What should I answer her? What should I answer her? He doesn't want to reveal his true feelings, right? Then finally goes, east, the direction of the compass and the purple archangel. You're surprised by the marble of the world, veined with suffering and love. At daybreak, go on. There is no shame. There hasn't been any shame in a long time. It is not shameful to copy out this winter song. Not shameful to let yourself give in to your feelings. And he writes the lines from a song. Yes, shame.
And illness and shame.
Right? And he goes, this is the lines he sends her. I close my eyes. My heart still beats fervently. When will the leaves at the window turn green again? When will I hold my love in my arms? And then he ends with his lines, and to the warm sunlight of hope. Those are the last lines of the book. Damn. And to the warm sunlight of hope. So we get the sunrise all night, and then it wake up.
Rosy finger dawn, dude.
Yeah, so how about that? We get zone goes into the night.
True.
And then we get this compass sunrise.
All night up to the dawn, yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
But also, because it starts out when he's talking about people with all these fucked up illnesses, he's all ashamed of himself. He's like, I'm never going to be naked in front of a woman again.
Yeah. He is ashamed of himself.
And then he's talking about like the part where I tapped out or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't tap out. I just ran out of time. But there's a lot of stuff about, you know, he's often going into in both Zone and this book, like the Nazi.
Yeah, for sure.
Like race scientist.
For sure. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, that Globinow, he said. The first race scientist.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Who I'd never heard of. That was.
And they're all trying to, like, rid the. And he's talking about all these diseases. He's ill.
Yeah.
He's got an illness. He's got a mysterious illness, right? Something about that.
But, yeah, so. And you know, what these two books are hugely about, right, in which I think comes to a culmination in the Gravediggers Guild, is the other, right? There's a self and the other. There's all these, especially in Compass, right, which is about the Middle East and traveling
Occidental
through.
Occidental versus Orient.
Yeah, exactly. It's the other, finding yourself in the other. Wait, there was a good line about that.
Yeah, he was making me think some things about Palestine and stuff.
Yeah, he was saying a lot about the Middle East and, you know, it's.
See, but listen to this. Hedayat had one of those wounds of self that make you reel through the world. It was the crevice that opened up until it became a crevasse.
Mm. Yeah, Hedayat, who the blind owl.
And he's taking opium. He wants to take opium.
Yeah. Yeah, opium, because it starts out with the opium thing.
He wants to take opium's
a big part of it, too.
And then, like, 100 pages in, he's like, actually, I've only done opium like six times, maybe. But he's like, just in his apartment. Yeah. Like, fuck, dude, I'm trying to hit some opium right now. This girl, Sarah, one time we fucking spooned. Yeah. I didn't grab the breast. I shut up. Fuck.
See, it is like, damn, when he zooms in on a moment like that, like them laying together in the desert or them in the hotel room, it's like.
Well, I realize, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just. See, but listen, also Kafka spat blood. See, so then he's talking about other people, toys about him, which must have been far more unpleasant, those red spots on his handkerchief. How horrible. In 1901, Viennese out of four died of tuberculosis, apparently.
Yeah.
Was it the disease that made Kafka so popular? Was it the disease that was the origin of the misunderstanding?
Yeah,
illness.
And then he
speaks about illness.
Yet, you know, the tuberculosis thing, too, he has a whole, like, little rant that he addresses to Thomas Mann.
Oh yeah,
right, where he's where is that?
I just read that. It's like 317.
Yeah,
maybe. No, 280. Right here.
Which, you know, the Magic Mountain. That's a big tubercular book. You ever hit that?
No, I never hit it. Do you
me either. I just read Death in Venice.
I know he goes to do convalescence in the dam. You did? Sometimes there's just.
Yeah, but there is a, the sickness. And then there's that there's that Amory Schwarzenbach throughout the whole time, who is who Sarah's obsessed with, who's like, she's like the lesbian from who she was friends with, the Mons, like, and she was Carson McCullers was in love with her, and she was romping around
these peripheral historical figures, romping around with people we know,
and Sarah was obsessed with her, and she was all sick all the time.
This is so funny. He's clowning
Where is that?
He's clowning academia, academics on the bottom of 130.
130?
Yeah. He's like, on the bottom of it, he's like, he just goes, Sarah was very happy to find herself among all these Orientalists to observe them. Sometimes she sounded as if you were describing a zoo. This is the academic place in like the damn Middle East, in Damascus, I think. A zoo, a caged world where many people gave in to paranoia and lost all common sense, nurturing magnificent hatreds towards each other, madnesses, pathologies of all kinds, diseases of the skin, mystical deliriums, obsessions, scholars blocked that drove them to work, to polish their desks with their elbows for hours on end without producing a thing.
Yeah.
Not a thing, aside from the brain steam that escaped through the windows of the venerable institutions that devolved into the Damascus air. That's very like... Yeah, that's like me when I was reading too much. I had to stop and write some.
Yeah, it was just your brain steam.
Yeah, escaping. I was just emitting brain steam.
But that is, you know, reading an art really, it makes, you know, the feeling it gives me is I want to write something. I want to go out into the world. You know, I want to learn something. It's a very expansive, he's got such an expansive mind and heart. With all these books have that. Like, it's just this huge, you know, you know, and well, okay, the point I was gonna make earlier about the other, right? So he goes, you know, a lot of it is about finding yourself in the other, except, you know, but okay, let's see. Okay. These mystical considerations by the fireside we had taken for the expression of literary whim, the latest fad of a scholar. The revelations that summer gave them an entirely different meaning. Secrecy, love, guilt. This is him. Oh, this is him reflecting on what the story that her thesis advisor told him. Secrecy, love, guilt. We could glimpse their source. And if I wrote this grave and solemn text when I got back to Vienna, the recollection... it's probably to record them in turn as much to rediscover through prose the presence of Sarah who had gone, which is what he's doing with this whole book, plunged into mourning, overwhelmed, to confront her sadness in Paris. What a strange sensation rereading yourself, an aging mirror. I am attracted and repulsed by this former self as by another, a first souvenir inserted between memory and me. A diaphanous leaf of paper that light passes through to outline other images on it. A stained glass window. I is in the night. Being exists always in this distance, somewhere between an unfathomable self and the other in oneself. In the sensation of time, in love, which is the impossibility of fusion between self and other. In art, the experience of otherness. And that's the key to all these books, right? It's the
otherness infusing into the art.
Yeah, the unfathomable self and the other in oneself. Right. You know, and try to merge it in into
one
something.
Composer was like the first person who brought, was it Beethoven who brought in like the Orient into
Western
music?
Yeah, it was Mozart or Beethoven. Who was first? Beethoven was first. Oh, and then he got that whole there's one good bit where of Beethoven bombing. Like he has, he's playing
the
concert.
First time he played, everyone's like, nah,
and the piano's
like,
jacked up, and he can't hear, right? And he's going, and they're all like, no, but they know him already. He's like famous, and then he's clanking it out, and he can see on their faces that he's playing bad. You know, that was.
Dude, I found the spooning part.
Oh, where is it?
It's 172. This part's so damn good. He goes, so yeah, so they all post it up, and they're under some blankets. They're not even in a tent. Sarah rolled up into a ball against me, her back against my stomach. She kindly asked if that bothered me. I had tried not to let my enthusiasm show through. So, they're lying down together in this. It's some tourist place, but it's a historical site outside. Of course not. Not at all. And she said, doesn't. And I blessed nomadic life. Her hair smelled of amber and wood fire. I didn't dare move for fear of disturbing her breathing, whose rhythm overwhelmed me. I tried to breathe like her, adagio at first. Adiago at first, then largo. Next to my chest, I had the long curve of her back, barred by her bra, whose hooks I could feel against my folded arm. Her legs were cold, and she had entwined them slightly in my own. The nylon was at once soft and electric against my calves, my knees in the hollow of hers. I had to try not to think about this proximity, which was, of course, impossible. An immense desire, which I managed to stifle, consumed me despite everything in silence. The intimacy of this position was at once chaste and erotic, like the Orient itself. And before burying my eyelids in her curls for some hours, I directed one last glance beyond the blue wool at the sky over Palmyra to thank it for being so hospitable. Then they wake up, and there's a bunch of damn tourists around them. And then he's like, it's still all good, dude. The next night, we're going to sleep in a tent again. And they're traveling. And then in the night, they're like, oh, you got too far to go. You got to sleep in this one tent. It's like an Islamic tent.
Yeah.
And they're separating men and women. He's like, fuck, dude. I was going to press up on her again.
Yeah, that's funny. And, you know, I like the, it's obvious that Inard knows a lot about Islam, too. And just I think sometimes, and you know, it's Ramadan now that we're doing this, you know, past sundown, right? So we're feast mode. Yeah.
Somewhere, dude.
Yeah, me too. It's on my desk at home. I'm in the introduction still.
Nice.
But, you know, this idea of like the Islamic world as, you know, you think of it as a Christian, like sometimes you think closed and, you know, but he has this, you know, he paints an Islamic world that's very, you know, productive, and they're, you know, everything about it is very expansive and big. Yeah. And these, you know, he contrasts it with the Islamists and the ISIS and all that, you know, going against their own culture, really, and breaking stuff and crashing stuff. And, you know, that, you know, and this leads you, you know, the Inard leads you into some Wikipedia holes too. Right. And I was finding out, the family that runs Saudi Arabia now that started it, the original Saud, when they're Wahhabists, right? They follow a strand of conservative Islam from this dude Wahhabi. You know, they don't call themselves that, but it's the dude Wahhabi who started it in like the 18th century.
Yeah.
And they think any site of like with any significance is like an idol and should be destroyed.
Yeah.
So they like dug up like Muhammad's burial ground and cemetery, the original cemetery where Muhammad and his descendants were buried, where all that was like, you know, sacred holy place. They dug all that shit up and destroyed it. And it's, you know, just, and I think he's, you know, there's something very against this conservative element of culture. Both. In both of them, of because like closing yourself off.
He spazzed on Wagner. He calls him like an anti-Semite.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He spazzed on him.
And he's like,
because he's trying to keep a purity of music without any influence.
Like, all his books are, all his, everything he made except for, he's like, you don't want to listen to me. Nietzsche felt it too.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, all his music is trash except for Tristan and Isolde. Yeah. Everything else is just so fucking hypocritical and Christian.
Yeah.
Overly
it's,
Christian.
Yeah, it's too Christian. It's like, too Christian.
He's snapping, dude.
No, but
he's really spazzing on historical figures.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He takes it to task.
Listen to this though. The next night.
Where's that?
No, it's just 179. It's a little bit after that bit I meant, and it's just good longing bars to continue. My pod is just a bunch of dudes sitting around reading like books about sad men about their longing of their failures and their cowardice. Yeah. That's the theme of my pod now. Just Dean reading like the saddest shit from Wilbeck. But he goes this is also a good example of how he comes back to real-time scene. He's like, I'm thirsty. How much time do I have to get? How much time do I have left to live?
Too.
I could get up, put my headphones on, and listen to music, see consolation in music. There's something about music being, he says, it's the one thing to take you away from like the linearity to death.
You know?
And wars and pain. It's like music is one little thing outside of time. Yeah. It's its own time. But he goes, I could see consolation in music. In Nadim's ode, it says like a Middle Eastern spelling of ode. Anyway,
no, I'm not sure what that is.
I don't know what that is. I circled it. But for example, or in a Beethoven quartet, one of the late ones, and he goes, "What time is it in Sarawak? That's where she's at.
Yeah.
If I had dared to kiss Sarah in the morning in Palmyra instead of turning over like a coward, everything might have been different. Sometimes a kiss changes an entire life. Here we go with fate again. Fate changes course, just like Blanche. Blanche always spitting about fate. Sometimes the kiss changes entire life. Fate changes course, bends, makes a detour."
Mm.
Already I'd returned to Tübingen. I was looking up Tübingen, the town
in Germany.
And a bunch of like
Where he studied.
Where he studied. Yeah. Like where damn, what's his name? Some of the great German poets, you know, like.
What's it? Heinrich Heine?
Hölderlin.
Yeah, Hölderlin. Yeah.
There. That town looks sick as fuck.
Yeah, it does.
Dude, all these little ass, Julius German as fuck, dude. I was like, I'm trying to go exile there.
No, and then he.
Yeah.
There's.
And then he.
Yeah, but go ahead.
No, just, yeah, it just goes a little bit further. I realized how insipid our otherwise profound daily connection seemed. Oh, yeah, and then he's talking about this other woman he went and seen, right?
Yeah.
He dated. He's like, I realized how otherwise profound, how insipid our otherwise profound daily connection seemed compared to what I had glimpsed with Sarah. I spent the following months thinking about her and writing to her more or less regularly, but always secretly, as if I was sure that in these nonetheless innocent letters, such a powerful force was at work that it placed my relationship with Sigrid in danger. Emotional affairs, bro.
Yeah.
Those late night letters, dude. No, but something about the connection. But yeah, it's he has such a.
Huh.
I guess we said it. It is an orientation towards like, yeah, the. Is it just romantic? I don't feel like romantic's not even the best word.
No,
it's. It is romantic. It's longing.
Yeah, it's
incommunicability, overwhelmed by the.
There's a lot of overwhelming. He's overwhelmed by
his ladies. You know?
Yeah, he's in love. He, you know, he's overwhelmed by, you know, all this music and all this history, and it's just a very like
ecstatic.
It is ecstatic.
And this form, the form. Yeah, dude, this is the form. Dude.
Yeah, for sure.
Like just on that, like yeah, I'm like a crowd. Yeah. If there's something you want to write about,
yeah.
you could start from the beginning and build up a scene to it.
Yeah.
Or you could put the character somebody else and have something encounter something in life and have all those memories just gush
yeah.
on him.
It's the memories. You got to have the memories. You know, different. And I think he's a lot like Antunes, actually. Like, he got some bars. I'm like, he has to have read Antunes, right?
He has to. I mean, he's definitely read Bernard.
I mean,
obviously.
Yeah. He mentions Bernard by name.
He mentions Bernard.
Yeah, but I mean...
What do you say? Bernard... And you talk about revenge with Bernard.
Yeah.
Bernard says... I fucking open to it. I'm such... Dude, I'm fucking clairvoyant, bro. People take revenge for the help others give them. That's what he said. Wagner's anti-Semitism is hypocritical. He just got mad at the people who helped him. Sometimes people do try to get revenge on people that help you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, bro?
For sure. For sure.
I'm fucking triple marked, bro. For real, bro. I'm trying to help you. You're trying to get revenge on me, bro.
No,
he was hypocritical like all anti-Semites.
Yeah. But what was I going to say? I'm trying to find the damn passage where he goes on that date and he's thinking about his underwear.
That's funny.
You know where that is? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's probably right around, that was 179.
It was early.
And that was, no, 179 was what I just read, but it's after that, I think. Yeah, and then like he like spastically just leaves the date.
Yeah.
He's like, why did I even go on a date with her? It's like, well, obviously I wanted to fuck her.
Yeah.
What's that?
What do you think? We should take a second?
Yeah, let's take a second. Yeah. Let's switch over. I'm talking crazy about.
Okay, let's start talking real crazy.
Give him the free 90.
Yeah.
Hop on over to the Patreon. We'll, you know, really get into the meat. That's a good educational introduction for the kids.
Reading art.